This is Nelson Searcy, and I want to welcome you to this recording, Time Management for Busy Pastors, over 30 practices that you can develop in your life to save you time and make you more effective. And I'm so glad that you purchased this resource. In fact, I want to thank you right up front for joining us and for being a part of this resource today. I'm excited about what I have to share with you, and I'm more excited about how this can make a difference in your life. Because I can tell you from personal experience that time management has been one of my greatest challenges as a person, as a spouse, and of course, as a minister. I began my study of time management when I was just very young. And as a teenager, someone first gave me a time management book. And I'm fairly certain that this book is out of print today, but I'll tell you the title because it intrigued me so much. The book was called The 90-Minute Hour. And when I first saw the title of that book, I thought, that's crazy. How do you get 90 minutes out of a 60-minute hour? But the author made a great point, and the point simply was that some people can get more done in an hour than other people do. And that particular principle has really changed my life, has really changed my perspective on time. Because the fact is, we all know people who can get more done in 60 minutes than another person can get done in 60 minutes. So is it possible that we can all get more done with our time? We can all enjoy life more. We can all do more things for the kingdom of God. I think it is. And that's why I'm so excited about this particular resource. And we all are busy. And you're busy, but yet you've decided to invest the time with me over the next couple of hours to go through these over 30 time management practices. And so I just want to remind you on the front end of the power of time and how time management can make a big difference in our life. First, let me tell you what I know about you. I know that because you picked up this resource, you are someone who is interested in high achievement. You see, most people just walk on by when they see a time management talk or they see a time management book. They don't pay any attention to it because they're really not that concerned. They're just letting life go by. They're just letting the days pass and the weeks come and go. But you're serious. You're focused. You want to get more done. And so I applaud that because after all, we're involved in the greatest possible vocation, that of ministry. And I really believe that the greatest ministry requires the greatest management. And so it's important that we take a look at the time. In fact, the Bible has a lot to say about time. I won't be able to share all of these in the resource today, but there are dozens and dozens of verses about time, not the least of which is Psalm chapter 90, verse 12, where the scripture says in the New Living Translation, "Teach us to make the most of our time so that we may grow in wisdom." And so there's a connection between time management and being wise in our life. And of course, in Colossians 4, verse 5, it says, "Live wisely among those who are not Christians and make the most of every opportunity." And so how do we make the most of our time? How do we make the most of every opportunity? Well, that's what we want to talk about today. And I want you to capture a picture right up front here of how important it is to be a good steward of your time. Because time is a non-renewable resource. Time is really more important than money. Time is really more important than energy because you can't make more of it. You can always make more time or you can always rest and create more energy. But the fact is, you're never going to get more time. Those that are effective in ministry and those that are not so effective, they're all given 24 hours every day. And we can make the most of it. We can make the most of every opportunity. We can grow in wisdom, or we can squander what God has given us. And so really, being a manager of time is being a good steward of the time that God has given us. The scripture makes it clear that none of us are promised tomorrow. We're only promised what we've been given today. In Psalm chapter 90, verse 10 of the New Living Translation, it says, 70 years are given to us. Some may even reach 80. But even the best of these years are filled with pain and trouble. Soon they disappear and we are gone. And how true that is. Time passes by so quickly. Time is constantly ticking. Time is constantly moving forward. And all that we're guaranteed is what we have now. And so what are we going to do with what we've been given? And someone told me very early in ministry that when it comes to time management, that there's always enough time to do God's will. There's always enough time to do God's will. But I don't know how you are, but I often feel like I'm chasing the clock. I'm chasing the calendar. I've got more to-dos at the end of the day than I have time to get those done. And so I've been a student of time management. Ever since I first received that small book I was telling you about, The 90-Minute Hour, I've been trying to practice time management tips in my life. I've had the opportunity to read literally dozens of time management books. I've probably listened to over 100 hours of teaching on time management. I've gone to time management seminars by some of the biggest names around in both the Christian world and in both the secular world. I've really worked hard at time management. And what I want to share with you over these next couple of hours is a summary of some of the best principles that I've learned. And I hope that by listening to this recording, you're literally going to be able to save hours, if not days, over the next couple of years. Let me just give you an example of this. Let's say that as you invest these next couple of hours with me, that by the end of our time, you find some practices that will help you save 10 minutes a day. Now, saving 10 minutes a day is not that much at first. You think, okay, I'm 10 minutes early to get home, or I have 10 extra minutes at the office to get something done, or I have 10 more minutes to work on my sermon. At first glance, saving 10 minutes doesn't sound like a lot. But if you were able to do that every day over the course of a year, that means that you will have an additional 2.5 days of work time, 2.5 days of family time, or perhaps 2.5 days of leisure time. Now, if you could get an additional 2.5 days over the next year by making a 2-hour investment in this resource, that would be worth it, right? It would be worth it to me. I'll take all the days that I can get. But then think about this. If I could save you 60 minutes a day for the next year, and I believe these principles and practices that I'm going to teach you are that powerful. I believe they'll help you get things done more efficiently, and they'll make you more effective. And so I don't think it's unreasonable to say that the practices that I'm going to give you, if you put many of them in place, will save you as much as an hour a day. And so if you are able to save an hour a day over the next year, that means that you will save 15.2 days. So over 15 days that you'll get back in your calendar. Now that's over 2 weeks. That could be 2 weeks that you could spend with your family, or 2 additional weeks that you could spend in personal development. 2 weeks to do whatever you want to. 2 weeks that's there in your schedule that's available to you if you become more effective in time management. So as I share these principles and practices with you, I want you to understand that I'm a student as well. I don't have all of these down. These are practices that I try to live up to, practices that I try to do every day in my life. And some days, like you, I do better than others. But because I take ministry so seriously, and I know you do too, I want to make sure that I use every moment of my time for the best possible purpose. I realize that using my time well is a way to honor God. I realize that using my time well is a way to honor my family, a way to honor my spouse. I realize that using my time well is a way to honor my church, because my church is paying me to be the pastor. They're paying me to be the minister. And so I want to be as effective with that time as I can. I also realize that being a good time manager is a witness to my community. And when someone in the secular world, or someone who is not churched, sees a pastor who knows how to manage their time and knows how to be effective and efficient, I think that's a testimony. And I think it's a testimony to our dedication to God, and a testimony to an unchurched world about who God is and how serious we take our ministry. So with all of that in mind, let's begin to think about time management. Well, as I've already said, there's always enough time to do God's will. And so one thought that we have to think about very early on is, if I don't have enough time to do something, is it really God's will or not? And that's a very powerful question, and one we're going to come back to over the next couple of hours together. Well, as I've thought about time management, I realize there's only 2 ways to manage time. And in many ways, you don't manage time, you manage life, but there's only really 2 ways to manage time. The first way is to simply do less. You just decide to do less. You cut stuff from your schedule. You leave stuff undone. Or you learn to say the most powerful time management word in the universe, the word no. The word no, it's a very powerful time management technique. Sometimes we can't always say no to something. Sometimes we can't let something drop. After all, what we're involved in is a holy endeavor, the endeavor of ministry. But that is one way to manage time, to simply do less. But the second way to manage time is equally as powerful, and that is to do what you're doing now, but do it more effectively, more productively, to be able to do what you're doing faster, better, and earlier than you're doing it right now. And this is really your only 2 options, either do less or do what you're doing more effectively. So with that as a foundation, I want us to look at over 30 practices that we can develop in our lives to help us either do less and say no, or cut stuff from our to-do list, or to do what we're already doing more effectively. So if you're ready to save 15.2 days over the next year, or you're ready to cut 10 minutes a day from your schedule, if you're ready to get your stress level lowered and your productivity raised, then let's get ready to look at these time management practices. Practice number one, determine my values. Determine my values. Before we get into the very specific tactics for how to manage our time, I think it's very important that we determine our values, because the values help you prioritize what you're doing in life. Values tell you what's important in life. Values help you make the tough calls when there's conflicts and do I spend my time this way or do I spend my time that way? And so it's very important that you determine your values. So to do that, you simply ask, what are the most important things in my life? One way to think about this question is to say, if I had 1 week to live, what would I want to do? How would I want to spend my time? And then if you want to push that, you could say, well, if I had 1 day to live, who would I want to spend my time with? Where would I want to spend my time? If I had 1 hour to live, where would I want to spend my time? How would I want to spend my time? These are all questions of values. And of course, for all of us listening, ministry is a very high value. But perhaps on that list of the top five, ministry doesn't rank number one. In fact, I bet in your life it doesn't rank number one. Perhaps your family would rank number one, or perhaps your friends would rank number one. These are very important decisions to make. Who do I value? What do I value? How do I want to spend my time? So it may be important right now just to press pause on this recording and to take a piece of paper, number it 1 through 5, and write down your top 5 values. And my guess would be those would be the 5 most important people in your life, or the 5 most important groups of people in your life. And then perhaps at number 5 would be ministry, or perhaps ministry would be number 6. Now, the reality is sometimes we have mixed up values. We have misplaced priorities. And something that is lower on our list has to take priority over something else. And I understand that about ministry. I understand that sometimes your family will suffer because of ministry demands. And that's okay as long as it happens sometimes. But as a general rule, we want to try to structure our time around our values. So practice number one is to determine my values. Practice number two, understand the difference between being efficient and being effective. Understand the difference between being efficient and being effective. It's very important that we understand the definition of these two words. Not only is this important for our everyday life, but it's very important as we get into these practices of time management. Because maybe your goal is to become more efficient. Maybe you simply want to learn to do things well and do them faster than you're doing them now. And so that's what efficiency is all about. Efficiency is being able to take a project that would take most people an hour to do and being able to do it in 50 minutes with the same level of excellence that someone would have if they did it in an hour. And it's important that we become efficient. And many of these practices that we're going to look at will help you be that. They will help you be more efficient. But efficient is doing things well. But then effective is doing the right things. And so you have to ask before you do anything, not can I do it efficiently, but does it need to be done at all? The greatest time management question that I know is simply this: does this need to be done at all? Because the only thing worse than doing the wrong thing or doing something slowly is to do the things that needeth not be done at all. And so the first question is a question of effectiveness. Do I need to do this? Should I be involved in this? Do I need to have my hands in this? Do I even need to do this at all? And then once it passes the effectiveness test, then you want to ask yourself, how can I do this efficiently? And the thing about efficiency is that it's often developed through practice. As you practice doing something over and over and over, you can become more efficient at it. And you're going to notice that a lot of these practices that we're going to look at on the rest of this recording are to help you become more efficient. And the first time you do something always takes longer than the second time. But if you rehearse and reevaluate and try again, you can often find that your efficiency level will go up. And that's why some people can indeed get more done in 60 minutes than others. And we're going to look at some of those efficient principles and practices along the way. So learn the difference between effectiveness and efficiency. Practice number three, understand the important, urgent quadrants. Let me try to explain. If you can imagine that you have a blank sheet of paper and you draw a vertical axis on it, at the top of the axis, you would put the word important. And then you would draw a line straight down. At the bottom of the axis, you would put the word not important. And then imagine that you do a horizontal axis across the middle of the page. On the left-hand side of the page, in the middle, would be the word urgent. On the right-hand side would be the word not urgent. And then basically, you've divided that sheet of paper into four quadrants. Quadrant number one on the upper left is the important, urgent quadrant. Examples of things that are both important and urgent would be perhaps an overdue power bill. A power bill has come and you didn't pay it, and so now it's urgent that you pay it, and now the power company is at your door threatening to turn off your electricity. So it's important and urgent. And then if you look at the upper right of this quadrant, you would have those things that are important but not urgent. This could be thought of as quadrant two. And really, this is where we want to spend our time, in quadrant two, on the important things of life, but those things that are not necessarily urgent, or there's not necessarily any recourse for not doing those, at least immediate recourse. An example of this might be spending time with your children. Spending time with your children, I think we would all agree, is a very important activity, but because there's not an immediate consequence for not spending time with our children, we may see that as not urgent. Then if you look at the lower left of the quadrant, you would have the words urgent and not important. And one example of this would be a ringing telephone. And here in quadrant three, the telephone is ringing. It appears as if it's urgent, but you don't know who is on the other end of the phone, so it may not be important at all. Certain interruptions that come into our life. Someone knocks on your door. They just want to shoot the breeze with you or just chat about the game from the weekend. That can be an urgent matter because they're knocking at your door and they don't seem to want to go away until you let them in, but it's not necessarily important because what they have to say doesn't really matter. And then over on the lower right-hand side, you have quadrant four, which is the not important and not urgent. Examples of this might be watching another show on television or perhaps pursuing some other type of entertainment that doesn't seem to have a purpose beyond just continuing to do the activity. Now, at first glance, it seems obvious that we would want to try to eliminate as many not urgent and not important activities in our life as we can. When you understand these quadrants, what you can do is you can take every activity and place it in quadrants 1, 2, 3, or 4. And you can determine this. What is most important in my life? And your values determination that we did earlier will help you know what is most important in my life. And then you can ask, is this an urgent activity or is this an activity that is not so urgent? But understanding these quadrants can be very helpful when it comes to time management. It can help us see where we're spending our time and where we can cut. And obviously the goal in this exercise is to spend as much time as you can in quadrant two, to catch something that before it becomes urgent so it doesn't steal your time at the last minute, but to always spend your time doing the things that are most important, to spend time doing things that are most effective and then learning to do those in the most efficient way. So understand the important, urgent quadrants. Practice number four, learn to pray this prayer. God, what is the best use of my time right now? God, what is the best use of my time right now? Can you imagine the difference it will make in how you manage time and how you invest your time in the most important, most effective things on your list if you prayed the prayer, God, what is the best use of my time right now? You know, the Bible teaches us that if anyone lacks wisdom, they can call on God and He will freely give it to us. And so God will show you how to manage your time. God can literally direct the minutes of your day if you allow Him to. So you can imagine before you, you have your to-do list and you have 60, 70, maybe 80 things on your to-do list. And you eye that up and you say, God, what's the best use of my time right now? What should I be doing during this hour? What should I be doing during this week? And God will show you, God will direct you. Because your goal and my goal when it comes to time management and management of our ministry is to make sure we're doing the best possible things at the best possible time. And so when you're praying, God, what's the best use of my time right now? God can direct your steps immediately. God can make you effective. God can make you efficient. And God can help you spend the time in the important areas of your life in ministry. So learn to pray that prayer. God, what is the best use of my time right now? Practice number five, practice the Sabbath. Practice the Sabbath. Ensuring that you're living your life by God's divine schedule is very important when it comes to time management. The Bible clearly teaches that God has established a natural rhythm to the way we are to live our life. And that rhythm is we work for 6 days and then we rest for 1 day. Now, in this time management discussion, the intent here is not to give a full theological treatment of the Sabbath, but to simply remind you that God says we are to take at least one day of rest every week. And what I've learned in my own life, that working 6 days and resting one makes me far more effective than working 5 days and resting two, or working 7 days and resting none. Because God's rhythm, God's order to the way we are to live our lives and use our time is 6 and 1. 6 days we work. And we're going to look at a lot of practices that are going to help you make the most of those 6 days. But in this particular practice, number 5, we have to be reminded of the one, of taking the full day of rest. This is a 24-hour period where you're not engaged in your primary area of work, which for us would be leading our churches, being pastors on a church staff. Now, the way God designed the Sabbath is that it is to be a multi-purpose day. In fact, I've discovered that there are at least 3 purposes for the Sabbath. The first purpose is the purpose of rest. We are to use the Sabbath as a day of rest. Now, this is generally active rest as opposed to passive rest. It doesn't mean we sleep for 16 hours, although on occasion that may be the best thing you can do on your Sabbath. But it's more of an active rest, a restorative rest, a recreation, if you will. And so what brings rest into your life? What recharges you and refills you? The first purpose of the Sabbath is rest. Another purpose of the Sabbath is reflection. You look back over your previous week and you say, how did I do? How did I do in keeping my values? How did I do in being effective with my time? How did I do in being efficient with my projects? What quadrant did I spend most of my time in, urgent and important, or important, not urgent, and on down the line? And you ask yourself these tough questions. Did I consistently pray, God, what's the best use of my time right now? So the Sabbath is for reflection. It's for rest. But the Sabbath is also for review. You review what you have coming up in your life. What's going on in the next 6 days? What's going to be on my schedule? What's going to be placed in my priority list? What am I going to accomplish? What am I going to achieve? What am I going to do? And so the Sabbath can be used to review the next 6 days so that you ensure alignment around your primary values. And the Sabbath may have many more purposes, but those are the 3 primary purposes: to rest, reflect, and review. And so if you're not practicing the Sabbath, you're missing out on God's opportunity to speak into your life and arrange your life according to His will. So work 6 days, be as effective as you can, but make sure you take the one day of rest and Sabbath as unto the Lord. Practice number 6, schedule my time away. Schedule my time away. As I've said in another resource on developing a personal growth calendar, times away are very important. And here we're going beyond the Sabbath, which is the one day that you take every 6 days, and now we're talking about longer periods of time where you're going to be away. And because for so many of us, our time away often gets the short end of the stick, it's important that we schedule that very early on. And so right now, ask yourself, do I have time away scheduled over the next 3 months? Do I have vacation time scheduled over the next year? You need to have longer vacation times. You need to have longer times away with your family in order to be the most effective time manager possible. In fact, one of the greatest time management stories that I've ever heard is about a man who is about to go on vacation. And he finds that on the day before vacation, he is extremely productive. And he gets more done on the day before vacation than he did any other day of the year. And the boss is so pleased that this man gets so much done on the day before vacation that when he comes back, the boss tells him, "Why don't you pretend you're going on vacation tomorrow, every day of your life?" And the principle is that when we know we're going away, we're able to get more done. And that's a good time management principle, to pretend as if every day tomorrow is vacation. And we work today as if we're going to be gone for a period of time. And that's important. At the same time, having that time away, having these longer periods of rest, is going to make you more effective. I mean, the truth is, you need time away. You need time to recreate. You need time with your family. And so before you go to work on your to-do list and all the other things we're going to talk about on the rest of this recording, first, make sure you have that scheduled time away. One of the other benefits of having scheduled time away is that your family knows that this time is coming up. And so if you find yourself getting overly busy, or you find yourself getting stressed out with the day-to-day activities of ministry, and maybe you're not seeing your family as much as you should, or maybe you're not able to spend as much time with your wife as you would like, at least they know that vacation is coming. At least they know that a respite from the harried schedule is coming up. And so don't just pencil this time in your calendar. Write it in ink and keep your scheduled time away. Practice number 7, automate as much as possible. Automate as much as possible. As we begin now to think about ways we can be more efficient with our lives, automation is one of those ways that you can be more efficient. In the day that we live, it's possible to automate many, many activities that would require a lot of our time. Let me give you a story from my life. For many years, one of the days that Kelly and I hated every month was the day we had to pay bills. And it would seem for me that I would let all the bills pile up on the top of our computer or in our inbox, and then we would get together and we would spend a couple of hours every night writing checks. Now, I know for some of you that are listening that are younger than me, you're like, a check? What's writing a check? And I don't write a lot of checks today, but back in those days, it would sometimes take us an hour or two to write checks, and we were frustrated. And we were always at odds about how high this bill would be or that bill or whatever. And then somewhere along the way, I was reading a book on personal finance, and it said that now banks will allow you to do automated bill pay, or to have a bill automatically deducted from your checking account. And at first I was afraid that this might cause me to be overdrawn, or it might cause me to be uninformed about the status of my personal finances. But now I can testify to the beauty of automating as much as possible, because now I can tell you that I spend less than 15 minutes a month managing bills. And so instead of having to go through bill after bill and write checks and pay those, now I just log online and I look at my account and I know that everything is taken care of. And so I automate once and then I watch regularly. And I've done this with as many areas of my life as I can, from the power bill to my cell phone bill, all the way down to even my tithe. And my basic tithe is automated, but because my income will fluctuate from month to month, I can pay an additional offering to the church when I choose by simply logging on to my bank's website and having a check sent from my bank. Not only does that save me postage, but it saves me time as well. And so look for ways that you can automate as many activities in your life as possible. Practice number 8, keep only one calendar. Keep only one calendar. This is probably one of the first time management tools that I ever learned, but it's also one that I've noticed as pastors that we mess up all the time. It seems that it's really easy to have multiple calendars. We have stuff that we're to do at the office on the calendar at the office. We have stuff we're to do at home on the calendar at home. We have stuff that we're thinking about perhaps in our calendar on our PDA or on our Outlook calendar or our computer calendar. But the goal here in this time management practice is to only keep one calendar. Now, in reality, you may have to have multiple calendars. There may be a wall calendar at the office. There may be a personal calendar at home that keeps up with all the kids' soccer games or whatever it might be. But you personally have everything in your life integrated into one calendar. For me, I do this through a personal digital assistant, a PDA device. For many years, I used a Palm, and now I use a BlackBerry, and perhaps in the future, I'll use some other type of tool. But everything that I'm to do from a personal standpoint, from a church standpoint, from a ministry standpoint, it's all on that calendar. I even put birthdays on the calendar for family members, or I put times on the calendar when I should call people that I want to stay in touch with because I have a high value when it comes to relationships. But everything is on one calendar. And you see, it's impossible for you to manage your calendar and manage your life if you don't have the complete information in front of you. Because you've got to have the information about how your time is to be used every single day if you're going to then go to work on your calendar. So practice number 8, keep one calendar. Practice number 9, don't start the day until you've planned the day. In other words, before you begin your daily activities, make sure all of the activities for that particular day have been planned in advance. For example, some of the most effective people that I know when it comes to productivity and ministry, they plan the next day before they leave the office the night before. So let's say it's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday night and you're about to head home from the office. Instead of just immediately leaving, take an extra 15 or 20 minutes and plan everything that you're going to do on Wednesday. Plan it on your calendar and assign blocks of time to every activity, leaving, of course, time in between activities to handle those natural interruptions that occur in ministry. Go ahead and pull all of the folders that you will need for the next day and put them at the top of your desk. Go ahead and pull all of the tools or all of the resources together that you're going to need to complete the task for the next day. In other words, when you walk out on Tuesday night, do your gut level best to ensure that Wednesday is completely planned. You know, in the book of Proverbs, chapter 21, verse 5, in the Message translation, it says, "Careful planning puts you ahead in the long run. Hurry and scurry puts you further behind." And so by doing careful planning the night before, you're going to ensure that the next day runs as smoothly as humanly possible. But instead of doing that, many of us have to hurry and scurry through the day, and there's not an intentional plan to get through the day, so we end up just being further behind. And this is one of the most powerful time management principles that we're going to discuss. And when you first begin to implement this practice in your life, it can feel a little unusual. It can even feel a bit weird. But over time, as you see the power of this practice, it'll become as second nature as turning off the lights at your office when you leave. And so begin this immediately. Even if you can't plan all 8 hours of your day or all 10 hours of your day, plan as much of your day as you possibly can. And then simply work that plan. And as you do, you'll find that your effectiveness goes up as well as your efficiency. So practice number 9, don't start the day until you've planned the day. Practice number 10, develop a top 6 list of things to do. Making a list of things to do every day is a very important activity when it comes to time management. As we just talked about, you want to make this list of items you have to do tomorrow before you leave the office today. And then take just a moment and prioritize that list and put the top 6 most productive activities at the top of your list. By having this top 6, you're actually bringing to bear the 80-20 principle to your to-do list. Because the 80-20 principle says that 80% of your results will be found in 20% of your to-do items. And since most of us have many more items on our to-do list than just 6, we may have 20 items to do or even 30 items to do, the top 6 items are probably the 20% that's going to give you the best return on time, that's going to give you 80% of your effectiveness. And return on time is a very important time management principle, ROT. What are the things that I can do that will give me the best ROT, the best return on my time? And identifying these top 6 allows that to happen. It also allows you to seamlessly move from item to item to item so that you are as efficient as possible on the following day. For example, let's say that you finish your first 2 items on your to-do list and you do not have them prioritized. So you look over the other 18 items and you say, what am I to do now? It's at this moment of trying to prioritize your day on the fly where you're most open to interruptions or you're most open to distractions. But if you know that as soon as you finish item number 2, you should now move on to item number 3, and then number 4, and then number 5, and then number 6, it keeps you moving forward. It keeps you feeling productive. It actually builds momentum over the course of your day so that you know you've achieved all that you can. At the same time, having the top 6 handy and having it written down in a place where you can see it clearly allows you to know whether you can say yes to other activities or whether you need to say no to other activities. For example, let's say you've been working through your top 6 list and you've completed the first 3 items in record speed and it's now 11:30 in the morning and a colleague drops by and says, hey, why don't we go to an early lunch? Well, you can immediately look at your top 6 list and determine, am I close to completing this list or do I have a good ways to go when it comes to completing this list? And then you will know whether or not you need to say yes or whether or not you need to politely decline the invitation to an early lunch. It helps keep you on track. It helps you know exactly where you are at any given time. And by making the top 6 list your ultimate priority, What's going to happen over time is you become more efficient at doing these top six items. And so you'll be able to be more productive by getting the most important things done, but then you'll become faster at completing them, and thus you'll have more time to complete items number 7 through 20 or 7 through 30, however many you might have. And whether you only get six things done or whether you get 16 things done, by knowing that you've done the most effective things, you walk away from every day knowing that you were very effective. And that's a great feeling when it comes to time management. Number 11, learn the ABCDE system of time management. This ties in very well with the previous practice of developing a top six list. The ABCDE method of time management is simply to take every item on your to-do list and assign it a letter, either the letter A to say it's an absolute top priority, it's in the top six of items I need to do today. B, this is in second place, it's a secondary item, it's an important item, but it's not the primary thing I must get done today. And then C is, it's a potential item. If I get to it, it's okay. If I don't get to it, it's okay. And then the letter D stands for delegate. It means it's something that I don't need to do at all, something I need to pass on to someone else. And then some items on your to-do list are the letters E. You just need to eliminate them altogether. And so by prioritizing all 20 items on your to-do list and putting a simple letter beside it, A, B, C, D, or E, it will help you quickly determine what are your top six most important items, what is the next set of items you need to work on, and then what are the items, if you have time, might be good to work on. It also helps you effectively manage your time when it comes to handing items off to other people or eliminating items altogether. This was one of the first time management principles ever to be discussed in America. In fact, it's said that in the early 1800s, one of the richest men in America paid over $10,000, which was a lot of money now and certainly a lot of money back in the early 1800s, to be taught this simple time management principle. And I believe that the ABCDE method will help you save a lot of time and become more effective in everything that you do. Time for review. Let's take just a moment and review the first 11 practices that we've looked at so far. Practice number 1, determine my values. Practice number 2, understand the difference between being efficient and being effective. Practice number 3, understand the important and urgent quadrants. Practice number 4, learn to pray. God, what is the best use of my time right now? Practice number 5, practice the Sabbath, the 6-in-1, taking a day of rest. Practice number 6, schedule my time away. Practice number 7, automate as much as possible. Practice number 8, keep just one calendar. Practice number 9, don't start the day until you've planned the day. Practice number 10, keep a top 6 list of activities to do every day. And then practice number 11, utilize the ABCDE method of time management. At this point, as you've looked at these first 11 practices, you may begin to realize that time management initially may require more of your time. To plan your day before you finish your day may require some extra time added to the end of your day right now. Taking time to develop your top six list or taking time to develop your ABCDE list will take some time. But I want you to understand that every minute you spend in planning your time is going to save you 10 minutes in implementation. And then as you become more effective at this, you will find that every minute you spend in planning your day will actually save you 20, 30, even 40 or 50 minutes throughout the day. So initially, it's going to take more time for you to plan your day. But as you become more efficient at doing this, you will find that you're getting that time back many, many times over. And so don't think of it as added time. Think of it as an investment in your future. And so planning is an investment in your future. Developing a top six list is an investment in your future. Taking time to call your cable company or call your power company and automate your payments is an investment in your future. And like many things in life, it's going to require discipline on the front end so that you can enjoy the benefits on the back end. Because at the end of the day, you're going to pay the price. You're either going to pay the price of discipline on the front end, or you're going to pay the price of regret on the back end. And the goal of time management is for you to be as disciplined as possible so that you can accomplish God's will, enjoy your time in ministry, and raise a healthy and loving family. So that's the end of our review. Let's move on now to our next practice. Practice number 12, eat the frog. If you're going to be a good time management, you're going to have to learn to enjoy the taste of frog in the morning. You say, what does that mean? Obviously, this is a very humorous way of talking about a very powerful time management principle. I'm not sure who I heard first develop the concept of eat the frog when it comes to time management, but the one that has popularized it in more recent time has been Brian Tracy, the personal effectiveness guru that writes many books on time management and personal development as well as financial wealth. And the principle is simply this. If you got up in the morning and you had many, many difficult things to do on your to-do list, but one of those was to eat a live frog, which one should you do first? Well, if you decided to do other activities, the whole time you're doing those other activities, you're living with a sense of dread because you know, sooner or later, before my day is over, I'm going to have to actually eat this live frog. And so the time management principle says, make that the first item on your list. So you go ahead and get it out of the way. You get it over with so that you can move on to other activities that are not going to weigh on you as much. And so sometimes eating the frog means having the difficult conversation with a coworker. It means doing the unpleasant task that simply must be done. It means making the phone call. It means writing the memo. It means following up on something that you really don't want to do, but you have to do in order to move it forward. And many times, some of the most productive things that we have to do throughout the day are some of the most unpleasant. It simply has to be done. I remember one time in the life of the journey, someone had written a letter to me asking for a request for a certain amount of money. And I'm not normally involved in these decisions about where particular amounts of money would go in our church or particularly in this area of our church, but they had written the letter directly to me and I felt like it needed a response. So I ran it by the other person in our church who controlled that budget and we agreed that this was not a good use of our church's resources. And I let that letter sit on my desk for probably a couple of weeks before I responded because I so dreaded having to write the person to say, no, we're not giving you the money because I was afraid of what they might think. I was afraid of how they might share this with other people in our church. And so I let that live frog sit on my desk every day and it looked at me and it croaked at me. And over time, it began to stink up my office. And until finally, just one day when I came in, I said, okay, I'm going to eat that frog. And I put that frog on the top six list, and I went after it immediately. And I was so relieved to have that done. I was so relieved to put that letter in the mail and to move that off my to-do list. And then it was as if my mind was free and my mind was clear to move on to many other things. Because prior to doing that, every time I finished a project, I would look at that frog on my desk and say, hello, frog. And I would pet the frog and trim the frog's hair and move forward in spite of that frog looking at me. But once I had it done, it was like a breath of fresh air. And I was now ready to be productive again. And as silly as this principle sounds, it's really very powerful in our life. And so I hope you'll learn to enjoy the taste of frog, and I hope you'll make it a point to eat the frog first so you can get on to the better parts of your day. Practice number 13, get up 1 hour earlier every day. Get up 1 hour earlier every day. Since we just talked about eating the frog, we might as well now deal with something else that may at first glance seem somewhat unpleasant. The idea of having to arise 1 hour earlier. But the simple fact is that some of the most effective men and women down through the ages have been early risers. In fact, you probably know the quote from Ben Franklin who said, early to bed, early to rise makes you healthy, wealthy, and wise. And so the idea of getting up 1 hour earlier, an hour earlier to reflect on your day, to plan your day, to review your top six lists, to spend time with God and asking His blessing on your day, to just simply commune with the Lord and let yourself be refreshed spiritually is a very powerful discipline. Now, I'm a firm believer in sleep. In fact, I believe that many ministers do not get enough sleep, and it's difficult to learn our sleep cycles as to know whether we need 5 hours of sleep or 6 hours of sleep or 7 or 8 hours of sleep. And believe it or not, I tend to fall more on the 7 and 8 hours of sleep. I need approximately 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night to be as effective as I can throughout the day. And so I can't just always cut an hour of sleep off the early part of my day. So what do I have to do? I have to learn to go to bed earlier. I have to sleep in on the front of my night versus at the end of my night. In other words, I have to go to bed an hour earlier so I can get up an hour earlier. And I've talked to many people, particularly some younger people in ministry, and they said, this is impossible to do. And I say that's not true because we do it every year, at least once a year, when daylight savings time begins. We all set our clocks back, and at first we may be a little sleepy, but over the course of a month or so, we adjust to having to arise 1 hour earlier. And we trick ourselves by setting the clock. And of course, the government and American culture forces you to do this. But if you can do that culturally, why can't you do it from a spiritual standpoint or from an effectiveness standpoint? And so I would encourage you to practice that. In fact, some of the most effective people I know arise every morning between 5 a.m. and 5:30. And I can tell you, I do not always do this. But when I'm trying to be effective, I want to schedule myself to be up 1 hour earlier and be ready to go. In fact, most people get more done in the first 2 or 3 hours of their day before other people even come to work because they're up and they're effective and they're going at it and they're getting their top six list done. They're eating frogs of all shapes and sizes and they're moving forward and positioning themselves for effectiveness. Practice number 14, arrive 10 minutes early. Arrive 10 minutes early. Whatever you're involved in, whether it's going to a meeting or simply going to work or meeting your wife for lunch, make sure you arrive 10 minutes early. By getting there just a few minutes early, it gives you a chance to prepare for the activity you're about to engage in. At the same time, it lowers your stress because one of the most stressful things in our lives is to think we're going to be running late. Whether we're going to be running late or not, just the thought that we're going to be late is going to raise our stress level. And what happens when you're running late is not only are you several minutes late getting to your activity, but then it takes you an additional several minutes to get engaged in that activity. So you end up having a double waste. You're wasting the time that you're late, and then you're wasting the time and catching your breath and trying to get focused on what you're trying to do. So let's just go back to that example of having lunch with your spouse. If you know you're going to have lunch with your spouse at high noon, why not get there at 11:50? Getting there at 11:50 allows you to get your name perhaps on the waiting list for the restaurant. It allows you time to hit the restroom if you need to. It allows you your time to disconnect from the meeting you just came from at work and now focus on what you and your spouse have to do. It allows you the time to get into the proper state of mind to enjoy a nice relaxing lunch with your spouse. So 10 minutes early is really very beneficial for you and very beneficial for this time out with your spouse. But the same thing is true about a meeting. If you have an important meeting, why not arrive a few minutes early? Maybe you want to stop for coffee on the way, or maybe you want to get settled in, or you find your place in your notebook, or you print out that last minute file, or you get that folder ready. But the 10 minutes just gives you a buffer. And learning to live your life with margin is a very important time management principle. And if you think about margins, most of us are familiar with using word processors. When you print something out on a word processor, you don't run it all the way to the edge. Traditionally, a piece of paper would have a margin around it. It would have perhaps a 1-inch margin at the top or a 1.5-inch margin on the left or on the right. So you want to build margin into your schedule. I know, for example, I've been guilty of telling my wife the minimum amount of time it would take me to get home. She calls me at the office at the end of the day, and it's 5:30, and she says, when will you be home? I say, oh, I'll be home in about 20 minutes. Well, 20 minutes is about as fast as I could possibly get home. But as you know, you never get home as fast as you think you're going to. So I add an extra 10 minutes to that, and I say, I'll be home in 30 minutes. And that way, if I'm home in 25, she's happy, and I'm happy, and we have an additional few minutes to catch our breath before whatever we had planned for 6 o'clock might happen. And so sometimes you just have to get there 10 minutes early. Sometimes you allow yourself an extra 10 minutes to finish something. So the 10-minute margin lowers your stress level and helps you ultimately to be more effective. Practice number 15, always start on time. Always start on time. Now, whatever activity you're involved in, it's important that you have a start time for that activity. Whether it's your top six list or whether it's a meeting you're involved in or whether it's somewhere you have to be, there is a start time. And it's important that you have start times on your calendar, that one calendar that you're keeping that's a collection of everything that you have to do. And then you want to start on time. We just talked about arriving 10 minutes early, so that means there's a start time and you want to arrive a little bit early. But then once that time comes, when you are to begin, make sure you start on time. Start at your meetings on time. Be the type of person that is always where they say they're going to be when they say they're going to be there. Punctuality is a key to time management effectiveness. The reason a lot of meetings drag on and on is because we don't start on time. We're constantly waiting for other people to arrive. And what we've really done is by not starting on time, we've trained people to come late. Make punctuality a primary virtue in your life and in the life of your ministry. And so as you practice effective time management, you've got to get started if you're going to finish on time. Practice number 16, set an end time. Set an end time. When is this going to end? For every activity, have in your mind not only a start time that you keep and that you would even arrive 10 minutes early for, but set an end time. When is this meeting going to end? When is this activity going to end? Even with your to-do list, have a start time for that activity and then have an end time for that activity. Perhaps you have to eat that frog. Say, when am I going to start eating the frog? And what is the time at which I will end my feast on the frog? And so have an end time. You know, I've noticed that things tend to expand to fill the time allotted. And so if you give yourself 90 minutes, even if it's a 60-minute task, that will extend. If you set an open-ended time, then the meeting will just drag on and on and on and on. But just like it's a discipline to have a start time, it's also a discipline to have an end time. And this is particularly important when it comes to meetings. When you schedule a meeting with someone, don't just agree that we will meet at 2 o'clock, but agree that we will end by 2:30 or agree that we will end by 3 o'clock. I often tell people, tell me the items that are on your agenda for this meeting so I can schedule the block of time that I need for us to meet. And I give them a start time and I give them an end time. And if everyone knows that there's an end time, they're one, more likely to be on time for the meeting. Two, they're more likely to be prepared. And three, they've already decided in their mind how much time they have to talk with you about the task. And I found that many times when someone knows when I have to leave or when I have to wrap up a meeting, that they more quickly get to the point, they more quickly cut to the chase so that we can get on about the key business that we had to deal with inside of the meeting. So don't just let time expand. Instead, start on time and then set an end time. Practice number 17, work all the time you work. Go ahead and say that with me. Work all the time you work. This is a very important time management principle. It's to use every moment that you've been given at work to actually do work-related activities. And the classic story on this is about a person who had a sales job. And the person had a new wife at home and a new baby at home, and they were always concerned at work that they were not spending enough time at home. And so when he got to the office to go to work on making his sales calls, he was always thinking about his wife at home and always thinking about his children at home, and he felt guilty that he wasn't at home. But then when he got at home, because he had been ineffective at the office, he was thinking about needing to be at work and about the files that were piling up on his desk and the phone calls that he needed to make. And so in essence, he spent his entire day traveling from one place to the other. When he got to work, in his mind, he was constantly traveling home. And when he got home, in his mind, he was constantly traveling back to work. And so he never could get anything done because he spent all of his time going back and forth. And so the principle here is to work all the time you work. And so when you come to the office, whatever time that is, 8 a.m. or 8:30 or 9 a.m., you say, it's now time to work. It's time to work my way through my to-do list, to get my top 6 items done, to eat that frog, to spend my time on the most important things. And you work all the time you work. And sometimes distractions are going to come into your life. You have to take a phone call from a family member, or you have to deal with an issue with a child. And that's okay, but as soon as that is done, you now say to yourself, back to work. And you immediately get back to work. Instead of allowing that interruption to stretch on and on and on and on, you say, I'm going to get back to work. And as you discipline yourself to work all the time that you work, you're actually going to find that you're more free when you get home to focus on your family. You're going to find that you're able to get home earlier because you've worked an entire day. And you're going to find that you're more effective by completing your most important task quicker, that you now have time to do some of the secondary tasks that you've always wanted to do. You know, I've heard it said that during an 8-hour day, the average person works less than 2 hours. So if you want to quadruple your time at work, learn to work all 8 hours. And as you learn to work all the time you work, at first you're going to feel very fatigued. Your mind may feel like it's at its wit's end because you're really working for once. You're now working an entire 8-hour day. But because your mind is like any other muscle, over time, you'll become used to that. And you'll be the hardest working person at your office, the most effective person at your office, and you'll be the best manager of time possible. So practice that. Practice getting back to work. Practice working all the time you work. Practice number 18. Learn to work in blocks of time. Your mind is created in such a way that you are most effective when you work in blocks of time. And these blocks of time are generally blocks of time from 90 minutes to 120 minutes, from an hour and a half to 2 hours. And it seems that there's something in the natural rhythm to the way you're created that you can focus like a laser beam for 60 minutes or 90 minutes or even up to 2 hours. And you can really get a lot done if you learn to focus. But the reality is, if we watch our time, most of us are not focusing for a full 90 minutes or a full 2 hours. Instead, we're focusing for just a few seconds or just a few minutes. And we work on something for just a few minutes, and then, ding, we have a new email. And the email ding pops up, and we get interrupted, and we go and check the ball scores, or we go and respond to the email from the friend from college. And then it takes several minutes to go and do the email. Then it takes several more minutes for us to re-engage the project that we're involved in. But instead, what you want to train yourself is to start a task, work on that task completely until it's done as much as possible. Now, it's not realistic for any of us to be able to eliminate interruptions, but we can minimize interruptions. If you're in an office environment, you can perhaps ask your assistant to protect your time and say, from 9 o'clock to 10:30, I'm going to be working on this specific project. Please try to minimize my interruptions. You can turn off the email ding, or you can turn off the IM, or you can even turn off the text function on your cell phone. Or dare I even say it, from time to time, you may even have to turn off your cell phone so that you can minimize these interruptions. But as you train yourself, you will find that you can get a lot done if you work for an hour and a half or 2 hours. In fact, I've noticed in my own life that when I first started this principle, I could really push myself, and I was able to get certain things done in 2 hours. But then as my focus became more effective, I was able to get the same project done in an hour and a half of time, and then sometimes actually in an hour. And as my focus and concentration became stronger, I became more effective and more efficient when it comes to my time. So go ahead and practice this. Tomorrow, when you start working on your top six list, go ahead and assign every item on your top six list a particular amount of time. And not every item is going to take a long time. Some items on your top six list might just take 30 minutes, but fully focus for that 30 minutes. Give your full attention to that 30-minute project and work it from start to finish during that block of time. And notice how quickly and effortlessly you can complete that project. And then move on to your longer periods of time and practice focusing for 1 hour, or practice focusing for an hour and a half. And this learning to work in blocks of time is a very powerful time management tool that you can use not only when it comes to your day-to-day activities at work, but you can use it when you're trying to finish a book that you want to read, or when you're spending time with your wife. And of course, the greatest gift that you can give your wife is 100% of your attention, your full concentration. So you have to learn to focus for long blocks of time. Principle number 19, make time management a game. Make time management a game. This ties into principles 17 and 18, which is work all the time you work and work in blocks of time. One of the ways that you can do this is to make time management a game. Play a game with yourself. Try to compete against yourself and say, how quickly can I do this particular activity with excellence? One of the things that I hate to do is I hate to file. And I have an assistant who helps me with a lot of filing, but from time to time, I have to be involved in the filing activity. And the files will pile up, and the different documents will pile up that I need to file, but I don't like to do it. And so I often will make it a game, and I'll size up that particular file, and now it's man versus paper, it's me versus cardboard. And I look at those files, and I say, how long do I think it will take me to do this? And I say, well, maybe this will take me 20 minutes to do. But I say, can I do it in 10 minutes? And I begin to play a game with myself, and I begin to hear music and crowds cheering in my mind. Okay, maybe I'm taking this a little bit too far, but I begin to play a game to say, how quickly can I do this? And I just make it fun. I maybe we'll put on some music if that's not going to be distracting. And I set the timer on the music for 4 songs or 5 songs, whatever it would take for 15 minutes or 20 minutes. And I play this game to try to complete it with excellence. At other times, when I've had longer projects to do, I often will record how long it took me. So how long did it take me to do the research for the sermon last time? Well, maybe I can do that faster this time. And I may reward myself for being able to do it faster, but with the same level of excellence. But I find that just this concept of making it fun, making it a game, competing against yourself is one of the ways that you can get more done in less time while maintaining the same level of excellence. Practice number 20, do like projects together. In other words, one of the keys to effective time management is to do similar projects back to back. So for example, I was just talking about filing. If you're going to do filing and I have all the materials out to file, why not do all of my filing at one time? If I'm going to do something that involves sermon preparation, why not do all the sermon preparation at one time? If I'm going to do something that requires research on the computer, why not do all of my research projects on computer together? In other words, group projects together so that when you're working in these blocks of time, it is as if you don't have to waste any time moving from types of projects to types of projects. Maybe you have to do a series of meetings. Why not do all of your meetings together, back to back in 30-minute slots or 15-minute slots or whatever the minimal amount of time you would need to conduct that meeting might be. But do these projects together, because it seems once you're in meeting mode, you can just stay in meeting mode. And so instead of having to go from meeting mode to sermon prep mode, you just stay in meeting mode all day. Or maybe when you're doing sermon prep, perhaps you finish the preparation for one sermon and you immediately go on to the next sermon. And so as long as you're in the mode of planning that series, you continue to plan that series. Same thing when it goes to perhaps staff evaluations or when it goes to reading certain books. If you're already reading a book about time management, why not immediately follow that with a book on time management? And this just seems to make you more effective to be able to do like projects together. Now, maybe you're asking yourself, well, what if the projects that I need to do together are not in the top six list? Well, in this particular case, you would want to do your most effective projects first. But if item number 3 and item number 5 are like projects and you could do those back to back on your top six list, then of course you would be better and more effective if you did those together. So practice this and see if it doesn't help you manage your time. Practice number 21. Touch it once. Touch it once. We all deal with paperwork. We all deal with files. We all deal with materials that come across our desk, whether it's mail or email or faxes or documents that we have to deal with. And so the time management principle here is instead of handling a particular piece of paper or a particular email more than once, we want to just touch it once. And the general consensus on this is that if you can complete it in less than 2 minutes, just go ahead and do it the moment that you get it. So if an email comes in and it's your time when you're checking email and you see that you can respond to that email in 2 minutes or less, then go ahead and respond to that email. If a piece of paper comes across your desk and you can sign it or sign off on it or agree to it or disagree to it and you can complete it in less than 2 minutes, then just go ahead and complete it. And so the goal is not to touch anything that you don't have to touch more than once. And the way to do that is to learn the 4 D's of touching something once. The first D is the word do. Is this something I can just do right now? Is this something I even need to do right now? And then if you need to do it and you can do it in 2 minutes or less, then go ahead and complete it. If you need to do it, but it's going to take a longer amount of time, then schedule it on your to-do list and put it in queue for your work the following day or later that day or whenever it might need to be done. One of the things I like to do with paper on my desk is I like to put a post-it note on everything, and I give the deadline for when I have to do this. And then I like to assign a particular time in my calendar for when I'm going to do it, assuming that it takes more than 2 minutes. So ask yourself, first D, do I need to do it right now, or when am I going to do it? The second D in learning how to touch something once is the word delegate. Is this something I can delegate to others? And by all means, if someone else can do it, they need to do it. And so delegate that to them and have an accountability loop so that you know when it gets done. And then the third D is, do I need to defer? Can this wait? Can I put this off? Can I deal with it later? And many things you can. I mean, there's just some things you don't need to deal with at all. And so maybe you need to come back to them in a month or come back to it in 90 days or come back to it during a period of time when you are less busy. For me, I often defer things like this to Friday afternoon. just the way that my schedule works, Friday afternoon is kind of a time for me to catch up and deal with some of the things that I didn't have time to deal with earlier. But I may do it. I may delegate it. I may defer it and either never do it, or I may do the final D, which is dump it. Just dump it all together. One of the most effective time management tools you have in your office is the wastebasket. And so you just toss it in the trash. You don't even deal with it. And the way you do this is you ask yourself, do I really need to keep this? Do I really need to hang on to this? Or if I needed to find this at a later time, could I find it somewhere else? And then you dump it so that the touch you make is the pass from your desk into the trash can. But the key is to never touch an item twice unless you just absolutely have to. Practice number 22, organize my desk. Organize my desk. Now, if there's any time during this talk that I've been preaching to the choir, so to speak, it's right here. Because keeping a clean desk is a difficult task, at least for me. But sometimes I look at my desk and I look at all the items that are spread out across my desk and I say, what does this desk say about me? Does it say that I'm effective? Does it say that I'm organized? If a stranger came into my office to offer me a raise, would they offer me a raise based on how clean my desk is or how organized my desk is? But the greater time management principle here is that organization in one area of your life helps you to be more effective in other areas of your life. If you're like me, you've probably said to others, well, a clean desk is a sign of a sick mind. But the truth is, a clean desk is the sign of an organized mind. Because if you don't know where something is, if you can't get your hands on something quickly, if you haven't organized your desk so that it cooperates with your workflow throughout the day, then you're not really organized. And in fact, since your desk space is often your workspace, if you're going to be effective in your work, you have to be organized on your desk. And so take some time to organize your projects. Now, this doesn't mean you have to have a clean desk every single day like some people have taught. It doesn't mean you have to have an empty desk every day. But it means that the projects that you're working on are clearly laid out across your desk. And this simple idea of organizing your desk, or perhaps organizing your briefcase or organizing your car for that matter, or even organizing the important documents at your home, this simple activity can create organization and effectiveness in many other areas of your life as well. And it makes you feel good about your work. It helps you feel prepared for what's happening. It makes you proud of the space that you're working in. And so it really can create greater advantages than just the immediate return of helping you focus on the task at hand. Practice number 23, time routine activities. Know exactly how long it takes you to do routine activities. This is not only a great time management practice, but this is one of the best stress management tactics that I know as well. Let me try to explain. Perhaps every day at 4:30, you have to go pick up the kids at school. Maybe that's your job. Maybe that's just the reality of the life that you live. And so your goal is to know exactly how long it takes for you to get from your office to your school. How long does it take you to leave your office, walk out to your car, get in your car, drive across town, and pick up your children at school? You will generally have to do two different times. One is the minimum time it takes, how long it will take you if you hit all the traffic lights, if there's no delays, and if there's no stopping along the way. And then you might need to know the maximum time it takes. How long will it take you if you hit every traffic light, if there's some delays, or if there's some backup at the school pickup area? And so once you know these two times, then you can actually begin to plan your day. So let's say that it minimally takes you 12 minutes to get there, and at maximum, it takes you 15 minutes. So now you have to be there at 4:30, and you're working in your office. And if you don't know how long it takes, the last few minutes before you leave can be very hectic. They can be very unsettling. So it's now 4:00, but you know it takes at most 15 minutes for you to arrive at your school to pick up your children. So you can actually work all the way up until 4:15 and then casually walk out and get in your car and head across town. At first, this may seem like a simple time management tool, but let's think about coming to work in the morning. How long does it take you to get to work in the morning? What's the maximum time it will take, and what's the minimum time it will take? Well, if your goal is to arrive 10 minutes early so you can take off your jacket and get a cup of coffee, then you'll want to leave the maximum time it would take you plus 10 minutes. So let's say it takes you 20 minutes to get to work, and that's the maximum time it would take. Well, then you would want to leave 30 minutes early. So you would schedule everything in your day because you know the amount of time it takes. Now, many things that you're involved in are not routine. You don't know how long certain things are going to take. You don't know how long interruptions are going to take. You don't know how long those crises in ministry are going to take. If you know exactly how long routine things take in your ministry, it can help you manage your time at the maximum level while still lowering your stress so that they get done every time on time. Time for review. Practice number 12, eat the frog. Practice number 13, get up 1 hour earlier. Practice number 14, arrive 10 minutes early. Practice number 15, start on time. Practice number 16, set an end time. Practice number 17, work all the time you work. Practice number 18, work in blocks of time. Practice number 19, make time a game. Practice number 20, do like projects together. Practice number 21, touch it once. Either do, delegate, defer, or dump. Practice number 22, organize my desk. Practice number 23, time routine activities. Know exactly how long it takes to do routine activities. By this point, you're probably thinking, how in the world can I do all of these activities? Well, the good news is you don't have to start by doing them all. Just pick one or two activities and begin to add them into your week one by one over the course of the next several weeks. And as you begin to seek payoff from some of the activities, you can come back and re-listen to this recording, and then you can add other activities. Because the fact is, you can get a lot of fruit by just doing one or two of the activities we've described. And then you'll be reinforced in a positive way, then you'll want to add more and add more. And then it is possible eventually for you to do all of the activities that we're discussing on this recording. So with that in mind, let's get back to our practices. Practice 24, write it down now. Write it down now. As you're going along throughout your day, things come to mind that you can't deal with right now. Perhaps you're in the middle of a focus time, a block of time that you're working on something. But right in the middle of that block of time where you're really focusing on one of your top six to-do items, something comes to mind, something you need to do later, something you need to follow up on. What you want to do is capture that thought thoroughly on a piece of paper and then get back on focus, get back on track with what you were working on. And so you want to keep a list of to-dos that you aren't doing right now, but things you need to do later or things you need to add into your schedule for the coming week. In other words, you want to capture these little things or perhaps even some of the big things so that it doesn't interrupt your blocks of time. So you always want to have a little piece of paper with you or a post-it note nearby, or you want to have your personal digital assistant at a place where you can capture these thoughts. Now, I like to do this on paper. I like to do it on a post-it note, or I like to do it on the back of a business card. And so I'm in the middle of a focus project, or I'm in the middle of time with family, and something comes to mind. Well, I capture it. I write it down. And then I take those cards and I put it into my work queue for the next day. And this simple fact of writing something down allows you to get back focused on what you were working on, while it also frees up your mind to think about other things that need to come to mind in the future. So writing down these activities that interrupt your train of thought is a very important process so that you can get back on track, so that you can keep moving forward. But don't underestimate these things that come to mind. So as you're working, if something comes to mind, it's important that you capture that idea, because your mind obviously thought you needed to know this. And so then write it down and develop a plan later for how you're going to accomplish it. Just don't let it interrupt what you're doing. But I find that keeping a piece of paper nearby is a very important tool for time management. So make the point to write it down right now. Make notes on where you are ending a project. Make notes on where you are ending a project. The reality is, some projects can't be completed in the block of time that's allowed. Perhaps you've allotted 60 minutes or even 90 minutes to a project, but now you have to move on to something else. You have to get on to a meeting, or you have to get home to be with family. Well, allow some time at the end of that project to make notes on where you're ending. What are you thinking right now? What do you need to do next? Where do you need to begin? What was the thought process that you need to complete? And the way I think about this is, perhaps imagine that you're writing a book. And let's say you're writing a long book and you've just finished a chapter and you've left things in suspense. What would you want to say to yourself in order to write the next chapter in case you couldn't remember what you've just written? And I find making some notes about where you're going and where you're headed and what you want to do next at the end of every project can be very important. For example, at the end of the meeting, capture and say, what do we need to discuss at the next meeting? And by defining the agenda for the next meeting at the end of this meeting will allow you to be more effective when you come back together. So you want to make notes on where you are ending a project and where you need to begin the next time. Don't overestimate your ability to remember things. Pell ink is better than the best memory. And so write it down. Give yourself very specific notes. Give yourself a cheat sheet so that you know exactly where you stopped and exactly what you need to do next. And it doesn't have to be in great detail, but outline it as clearly as possible so that when you pick up the project again or you go to the next meeting, you know immediately where to start in that conversation. Practice number 26, use technology carefully. Use technology carefully. It seems that there's no lack of technology that's available to help us manage our time. But sometimes the technology can actually get in the way of effective time management. So before you adapt a particular technology to help you manage your time, ask yourself, is this helpful? Is it actually going to add value to my life? As I've said already, my practice is to use a PDA or to use a BlackBerry. But it took me almost a year to learn how to use that effectively. When I got my first Palm Pilot, I was actually using my Palm for my calendar, but still using a notebook to write down my to-do list on. And you know, the simple management tools sometimes are the best. So don't think that you have to always buy into the latest or greatest technology. Sometimes just having a pad and paper, a legal pad, or a small notebook, or a binder, or a journal can be one of the best ways to manage time. As I often work with young leaders, I tell them to put away the Outlook calendar or to put away the technology and just learn to manage their schedule on paper. Because if you can learn to do it on paper first, then you can adapt the same practices and the same disciplines to the technology. But at the same time, if technology can help you, if technology can gain time, then you may want to use it. But be ruthless in evaluating whether technology helps you or whether it hurts you. Is it making you more effective or is it actually taking more time? And then don't adapt to technology just for the sake of adapting. Use technology only if it's going to make you more effective and more efficient. So use technology carefully. Practice number 27, learn to type faster. Learn to type faster. Speaking of using technology, the reality is technology is always with us. Most of us as pastors and as ministers, we are required to use computers and technology every single day. And regardless of our age, whether we're very young and we were typing before we were writing, or whether we've been around for a while and having to use a keyboard is a very new thing for us, the reality is we can all improve our time management skills by simply learning to type faster. By learning to do regular typing faster, learning how to use the keyboard, by learning how to just to use that faster so that literally we are typing faster, but at the same time, learning how to use shortcuts. And this is a very effective time management tool. Instead of having to take your hands off the keyboard and go to the mouse to do a project, can you use the control key and a certain letter to save a file, to print a file, to close a document, to open a document? And so learning how to use the keyboard and use the computer faster is a way that you literally save seconds in time. And so if you can save several seconds every time you're working a project on the computer, over time you're saving minutes, and then over time you're saving hours. And so if you want, find someone who's very effective in your office or very effective in your church when it comes to using a keyboard or using a particular program, and let them help you learn how to use it better. Let them help you to learn to type faster, to use shortcuts, to do certain things inside of programs at a more effective kind of rate.